Blog Talk Radio.
Ça va bien. I hope we're all ça va bien-ing tonight. Darlings, it's Mummy, Sybil Brunson, and I'm coming to you live on our weekly podcast called Come Now, Don't Sulk on Blog Talk Radio Network. We're part of the Here Be Monsters studio, and I'm here with my producer and the founder of Here Be Monsters, Gwendolyn Holdenberry. Gwendolyn, how are you tonight?
I'm managing to walk a straight line. How do you like that?
Now, ladies and gentlemen at home, boys and girls, and I use those terms loosely, I just want you to know that Gwendolyn is not inebriated or incapacitated. She's having a little bit of an inner ear problem, and I think it's because Mars is in retrograde and Jupiter has gone direct, or Venus has is in conjunction with a trine of Saturn or something. I don't know. All I know are the planets' names. I don't know what exactly it is they do, but Gwendolyn's going to tell us all about that in just a second. But before she does, even as the producer of this show and as the founder of DaughtersOfIsis.com, I want to mention that our sponsors every week include DaughtersOfIsis.com. That's all one word. DaughtersOfIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. And we also have listeners like you that have been helping to sponsor us. If Gwendolyn, is that you coughing? What is that?
Gwendolyn. I choked. I'm so sorry.
Are you choking on what? A cashew or a dust bunny? We really do have to vacuum before the show. Darling, I know you're on a diet, but eating lint is not the solution. All right, back to what I was saying. DaughtersOfIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. They have 500 products. Go on their website during our show on your computer and check out their website. And I was going to ask Gwendolyn for a fragrance or a product, an essential oil that might be nice for us, but I wonder if it should come with a health warning. Have you been sniffing the lavender again, darling? Patchouli? Have you been drinking the patchouli again?
No, that would make you joke. That's like eating dirt. No, I basically have the very best idea for this week because everything is going so cosmic this week. The planets are intercoursing in the solar system in such a way as to create a lot of tension and stress, especially in our personal relationships. It's just a moment. It's a blip in the biggest blip there is right now. It's just a little intense more blip, and it will be done. Come out of the week, we will be better, we'll be lighter, and that's the best astro flash you get from me tonight because it's just way too weird. But
so we shouldn't take it too seriously if we've been bickering at home and everything.
Right. If you're feeling, you know, people are feeling cut off, people are feeling like they're floating away from one another. You know what you should do what I do? I cut my hair. It changes the energy. You get a haircut. It's good. And if you can't get to the salon, which you shouldn't actually, just, you know, a little of that conditioner in the hair, comb it out and just chop. I did. Anyway.
That's good to know. Cutting our hair would help to, I always know that after I get my hair cut, I feel much better.
Oh yeah. It shifts your energy completely. Now, what I would suggest though for people to put us in a more cosmic frame of mind, get out of the neighborhood that we live in here, the solar system, and get more cosmic and a more uplifted, looking down from on high perspective. And the scents in this are just absolutely beautiful because they take you to a very crisp, clean thought place. It's called Palladian Blue. And it's more of a cosmic consciousness. It's about alignment with the greater universe. It takes you, it's a great place to be when things are stressful and tensional and too much tension is being pressed. Now, this is a blend of essential oils that include blue tansy and lang lang extra with a little white grapefruit and just a tad of lemongrass. The combination all together and just a few drops of yarrow flower on top of that. And it really is a delightful, it's a really nice, takes you back to a really old version of an Estee Lauder.
So should they put the, should they get this, say the name again, what is the name?
It's called Palladian Blue.
And it's on the website right now, right?
It's on the front page, I put it on
and,
there.
And do we use it on our collar or in a diffuser? How should we use it?
Well, this one's a mister. So you just spray it and walk through it, or just
spray it
in your area or on an arc over your head. But it's really quite nice. And it'll take you to a place of rising above all of the chaos and catastrophe.
Great. Wonderful. Okay. Well, please look for that on the website tonight, folks, daughtersofisis.com. The fragrant memories of our ancestors. I want to remind you that our phone number tonight is 323-784-9639. That's 323-784-9639. Do call in. Gwendolyn and I are chatting. You had a news item about Ivanka before we went on. Tell everybody what that was about.
Well, oh, my goodness. Now, I was reading it, and then a dear friend called and said, can you believe it? And I said, what? And I said, oh, you're not going to tell me. Oh, I was reading among the many government perks that the Trump family enjoyed at this time. Ivanka gets, of course, patents. That's her big deal out of China. And do you know what her latest patent purloin is?
No.
Expensive to run-of-the-mill, even cardboard caskets. The ghoul. They're ghouls.
Oh, my God.
They're freaking ghouls.
That is amazing. Each week, the news items become more and more grotesque. And yet the election still looks like it's going to be very close, if successful at all. I mean, if Biden wins, he'll squeak in. It doesn't look like it's going to be a landslide at all. And the whole thing is just a catastrophe. All I can say is that I have been haranguing my crowds on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram to register and vote. And I will be absolutely apoplectic if certain groups of people who I will not name are scratching their asses and just too lazy to get over to the polls. I don't care if it's end of the world hurricane. I don't care what the excuse is. I don't care. I don't care that Trump has, you know, destroyed mail sorters and mailboxes. I don't care. Then stand in the 100 degree weather, stand in the driving rain, stand in the 3 feet of water and vote. I don't care if you have to wait 8 hours. Mummy is in a whole new portion of the country. And although in New York City, my vote meant nothing because it's so blue there, I am currently living in Pennsylvania. As many of you know, I moved to the suburbs of Pennsylvania, which is a whole other subject. And this is a purple state, A. And B, the area that I'm in, which is the suburbs of Philadelphia, we have plenty of red area here as well as blue, and my vote will count. I have moved to another place at a very opportune time. Mummy's vote will matter where I am now, and I intend to vote. You know, I'm already registered. It was one of the first things I did. I unpacked the toilet paper, the toothpaste, and I registered to vote. I got a new Pennsylvania ID and everything. So I'm doing my civic duty here as a citizen. And if I can do it, you can do it too. There's no excuse not to be registered and to vote, to be voting in what, 60 days or, you know, 90 days. What is it now? It's only like 74 days, isn't it?
It's 50 something days now.
Yes. What am I doing? Yes. I'm posting that. Yeah. It's like 50 something. Folks, we are down to the wire. And by the way, your vote matters on dog catcher. Forget federal and state and city. Your vote matters about the dog catcher being the right person. You must vote. This is, without doubt, my long and dramatic life of all the elections that I've survived and lived through, I think that Gwendolyn would agree with me that this election is truly a Caligula, Tiberius, fall of Rome. This is an election that is shocking. And I love American presidential history. I love, that's one aspect of history I love, is American history, specifically presidential history and all the events around each presidential term. This one, for all the animosity and violence and slander and everything that has gone before, the stuff around in the mid-1800s, 1840, 1850, leading up to the Civil War, we are in a crisis here, folks. I guess people won't believe it until there's cannon fire and there are gray troops and blue troops marching on each other just, you know, right down the street from here at Gettysburg. It's a very, very dramatic time, philosophically as well as emotionally and politically for this country. The philosophy of this country is in question. What we stand for, what we are going to be willing to live with and live for, is in question right now. There's a crap game going on right now, folks. People are on their knees in the dirt with the dice, and they're tossing the dice. And this is a crap game for the soul of this country. And we are sitting, and by the way, we can't, and you all know this, you all know it. It's not just red states versus blue states. I'm not trying to be a monster, but each family in this country has red voters sitting at the Thanksgiving table. Every workplace, the smallest shop, as if there are any left after what the Republicans have done to the economy, but even the smallest store with 12 employees, there is a red voter in there somewhere. They are in their workplace, they're in corporate places, they are everywhere, and they are at our Thanksgiving tables, which is why, long before Donald Trump was elected, back when George Bush was elected, okay, 8 years of that nightmare, then the 8 years of Obama's presidency being thwarted by a Republican Congress. So that was another 8 years. So we've lived 16 years now with this toxicity, and now this last 4 years. So it's been 20 years of people sitting at Thanksgiving tables shrieking or not speaking. We've known long before Donald Trump. Donald Trump is the festering boil after 16 years of like an ingrown hair infected. Finally, it has come to a seething, searing, pus-filled boil. And that's why last Thanksgiving and last Christmas and the Christmas before, people were openly commenting on network news that people are agreeing not to speak about politics, that people are struggling not to speak about politics at family gatherings or whatever. This has become a national nightmare. And what makes it even more so is that half the country thinks he's the Messiah, and half the country thinks he is the embodiment of Satan. It's like, it's incredible. What were you going to say, Gwendolyn? I'm sorry.
I really don't think that half the country.
I'm exaggerating, of course. I'm exaggerating, but it's more than 10%.
Well, of course. And last night, the other part that gets me here is you heard about that Sturgis rally, the motorcycle club rally. They've tracked about 250,000 and more cases of COVID that have tracked out from that thing. Now, he's holding these rallies, and last night, he's having one tonight, too. And last night, he had one that was all indoors, and somebody took a picture of it and posted it to Facebook, which was purloined by one of my friends who found it. And the picture is all these people gathered and crowded together. I mean, just there's not a mask in sight.
Yeah.
And I mean, how many of these people are still going to be walking and talking when it comes time?
My frustration, I understand what you're saying. You understand when I say half this country, I'm using that as hyperbole.
It's for hyperbolic
effect. The idea is that if it's 40%, if Biden and Trump are literally 48 to 49% and seesawing like that, that's close enough to being half of the country for it to be the end of the world. This is very, very, very serious that there are people in thrall to this grotesque nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
He is grotesque. I've been saying that I wish the Biden crew would publish commercials which were just footage of Donald Trump doing his mocking of the fellow with muscular dystrophy, and then the Billy Bush, you know, grab the pussy because they'll let you because you're a star. I wish they would just do 10 of his most grotesque moments with no narration, just his speaking voice, his visual, and at the end of it, fade out to black, and then on the screen in big white letters, "This is your president, blackout."
Well,
you wouldn't even have to say vote Biden. You would
sort of like the Daisy commercial.
Yes, the Daisy commercial with Goldwater. And yes, exactly. And that would be, if that was all it was, and you don't, not even to say vote Biden at the end, just say, "This is your president." It would be so horrific.
Both Biden and the Lincoln Project, which Steve Schmidt is pretty much behind that one, he's pretty witty. They have come up with a kind of commercial like that that has him speaking about all of interspace. He says something about COVID. And then they show something that's actually happened, and they interspace it in 30 seconds. So it's just, it's pretty stunning. It's like, this is what you got. This is what you're going to walk with.
One of the great quotes would be him at that press conference on February 29th saying that the virus is a hoax. It's a Democratic hoax.
Yes, that's you.
Just
and
showing
he actually said, you know, can't we do something with the disinfectant, with the bleach, you know? I mean, put a light bulb down your throat.
Just do his clips and let that hang. Because what would happen is that it would just concretize, it would solidify the left. But what it would do is it would humiliate, it would open up to humiliation his red followers. And that is where the erosion must happen. His followers must be hammered daily, hourly, repeatedly with what he has said, so that when their blue relatives or their purple, their independent voter relatives are sitting at the table, they say to them, "Dear God, these aren't lies. These are his own statements and actions. What can you say to this?" They must be humiliated into subjugation. It is the most appalling president in history. He makes George Bush look like a scholar. And George Bush was, I used to say this before you and I were doing our show, Gwendolyn. We've only been doing our show a couple of years. Before I even knew you, I used to say to people here on Facebook, George Bush should have been left on a hillside for wolves to carry away as an infant. His mother should have dragged that baby from a crib, dashed its brains out on the Senate steps, as they say in the Roman movies, you know, or taken to a hillside and let the wolves take it away and deal with it. A baby that should have been taken away by wild animals and killed and eaten. And that was George Bush. And he comes off as Einstein, Doc Hammarskjöld, and Mahatma Gandhi compared to that monster. A monster. That's he is terrible. Literally what Jean Simmons refers to when she confronts Caligula in the movie The Robe, where there's a great scene in the Roman palace, and Caligula is there saying, I will grant you mercy if you confess your sins. You know, and she says, why would I do that? You're a vain, insane monster. You're a monster.
You do have a
craze. And yeah, oh, great. It's probably Pamela Jett. She'll get on and get us back on pierogies. Yes, hello, caller.
It is Pamela.
Hello. Pamela, how are you? Pamela,
yes.
We got off on Caligula.
And I'm not going to get you back on the pierogi kick in a minute here, but I do want to reiterate what you need to reiterate, and I hope you reiterate that you need to vote for one or the other.
Oh, yeah.
Because a vote, and I realize it's people's right to vote. Okay, I get that.
Yes.
In the reality of it, those people that don't want Biden, that wanted Bernie or whatever, and they write in, you know, the garbage man, or they write in their best friend, that's still a vote for Trump.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, I agree.
Commercial, but they need to say vote Biden, because they'll just go in and vote for the garbage person.
Well, maybe. The one thing I would say is that I wish that lazy voters would all be red voters this time. I wish they would be the lazy ones and would say, oh, I know Trump's going to win. I don't need to vote for him. He's going to be a win. If anyone needs to be lazy this time, I hope it's the red voters, because I'm sick to death of my own, this side of the fence, scratching their asses and not getting around to voting for Al Gore. You know, I couldn't figure out a butterfly ballot. You know, I can play Canasta and Mahjong in Miami, but I can't figure out a butterfly ballot. I mean, it's just, oh my God, my God. All the minorities that make up the blue bloc, each one of them had some lame brain issue in 2000. And that's why he lost. That's why he lost, because
they had
people voting for Ralph Nader. Ralph Nader. Ralph Nader should have, the morning after, with Ralph Nader's concerns about the environment and everything, he should have done all of us a favor. He should have gone to his kitchen. He should have pulled out a Sabatier knife, and he should have disemboweled his intestines on the kitchen floor. He should have ended his life for what he saddled us with. 8 years of a turd from Connecticut with a Texas accent. A nightmare. An ecological nightmare. 8 years.
Well, he was a nightmare, but compared to what we have, he's an angel.
Well, I just said that. But I mean, but Ralph Nader screwed us. Ralph Nader was one of the four things that completely screwed up the election. If he had withdrawn himself from that and thrown all of his support behind Gore, but he was so venomous, he was so vindictive that Al Gore was not left enough, was not environmental and green enough. And that's what happened. Look what happened. A disaster. Jill Stein, Gary Johnson. My God, they belong in a furnace. If I could get a hold of those two, I would grab them, strip them naked, and throw them into an oven myself. That's polite Sybil Brunson for you. That's courteous Miss Sybil Brunson with her little stupid-ass meatball recipes. Yeah, Sybil Brunson, Mrs. Lovett. And today, folks, I've made meatballs again out of turkey and Gary Johnson.
Now,
I am the Mrs. Lovett of the 21st century.
Do you think that Biden's age could be a problem?
Oh, my God, a problem. It's Gibraltar. It's a problem. It's the Mount Rushmore of problems.
I have this good on good prognostic authority. It'll be President Harris before a year is out. So that's what you're looking at.
Yes, but the problem is that his age and the fact that he dodders a little is counterproductive. And the fact that Trump is incoherent and delusional makes it only slightly better. But, I mean, it would be wonderful if we had a vital, vibrant candidate in place on the blue side so that there's so much fraying like an old sweater on the blue side. It's like the blue block is like an old hand-me-down, stretched-out grandpa sweater. Cardigan sweater. Uh-huh. It's got threads sticking out here. It's fraying at the elbows. It's like all these different little opinions on the blue side. And Cory Booker came from New Jersey, and it's not really the Garden State. Well, Kamala Harris or Kamala, you know, I don't know how to say her name, so I don't know if she's presidential material. Mr. Yang is Chinese or Japanese, or his eyes are funny. I don't know if I want to vote for him. Fuck all of you. Look at the orange furor and know that whatever you voted for on the blue side would be a godsend. It's like stop fiddling around. Yes, Biden is a little bit old. He gets a little bit doddering, but he certainly isn't as incoherent as that monster.
Monster.
So, yes, I agree with you, Pamela. Absolutely. His age, the fact that he's not whip smart, you know, Bernie Sanders is more whip smart. I mean, Bernie Sanders, of course, is like Larry David. I mean, the most brilliant impersonation of a politician ever is Larry David doing Bernie Sanders with the whole Brooklyn accent via New Hampshire. It's like, oh, my God. It's like hysterical. So
and the funny part is Bernie Sanders is 2 years older than Biden.
Yes, but there's something burning brightly in there. Bernie Sanders is what I call – it's the old Jack London thing. I'd rather be ashes than dust. Bernie Sanders is burning up in the Earth's atmosphere like a meteorite. He is literally using all of his calories at the end of his life to burn brightly. He's a nuclear weapon heading for the Earth's surface. And he has used every calorie he has to be ferocious. And, of course, you can't win. You can't win on the blue side. So he's too ferocious. Okay, well, he's too grumpy. Okay, Biden is too doddering. Okay, Elizabeth Warren was too reasonable. That each one of them, oh, my God, there's no satisfying you stinking bag of losers. You know what? Hillary Clinton was right. There is a basket of deplorables. It's the blue basket of deplorables. A bunch of shrieking, snarling gorgons, medusas with snake all in their hair. I don't like it. I don't. It's like, oh, my God, all of you, shut up.
Oh, well, you know, the problem is, you know what the problem always has been, too. I mean, since I was voting, and that was at 18 in New York State, the problem is that your Democrats tend to be individuals with unique morals and ideas of their own and that are unwilling oftentimes to compromise, whereas your Republicans, and I'm talking about old-time Republicans, would be willing to make compromises and look down the road a little bit further, not get it in the moment, but think they can wangle
that is
it.
So, boys and girls at home, I hope you are listening to that ingenious woman. The fact that she would just have said that is absolutely true. In the old days, Republicans would shrug. They would smile. They would shake hands and say, all right, I'll give you a little bit on that side, but I need you to come back and help me on this one. There would be compromise. The difference now is, what's the expression, Pamela, you might know it, Democrats fall apart and Republicans fall in line? Or what's the expression? Republicans fall in line. The GOP falls in line, and the Democrats do – one of our listeners will call in with that. But I love that expression because it's more insidious than what Gwendolyn said. Gwendolyn said the old-timers – would compromise. Today, they don't compromise. the Republicans don't compromise.
Democrats fall in love, Republicans fall in line.
That's it. Democrats fall in love, Republicans fall in line. Thank you, Pamela.
There's so many artists in the Blue League, and so much less, so much mendacity in the damn Republican side. But you know, the thing is, right now, with all of what you're saying, Mummy, is that I am seeing some of my. I have a lot of the uber lefty pals that I hang with all everybody. I like to learn and grow. I listen to the Marxists.
I do too.
I listen to everybody. I am who I am. I'm a feckin' old liberal. But here's the thing. You're getting a lot of progressives, and I do consider myself that. In today's parlance, I still don't know what a snowflake is. But I am seeing people really angry with the Biden campaign, the Biden-Harris campaign, not paying attention to what is big on the platform from the Sanders-Warren side of the street,
yes,
which is a Green New Deal, which will rebuild this economy. The immediate need to go in on day one and begin to issue subpoenas and start investigations and put these bastards in jail who have done what they've done. They're not talking about that. I mean, if ever in the world there was ever going to be, and I really think this has come down off high, if ever in the world there was going to be a situation where health care for all would be right there blatantly staring you at the table, what is COVID? And they're still talking about, well, we're going to, you know, work on Obamacare. I don't think so. That made me angry the other night. I was screaming. You got to be kidding me. We're gonna stretch Obamacare? I don't think so. Medicare for all.
So
people are angry, and they're talking about it, and a lot of these people get angry enough to say, screw it, 4 more years, it'll all fall down, we'll pick up the pieces kind of thing, which is real fantasy time. What are you gonna do?
Well, I worry that we're running out of psychic fuel, and as a species.
Yeah, we are.
And
yeah,
I worry that if everything isn't fixed in this election, and it isn't all fixed 15 minutes later, or even at the end of the 4 years, and if everything isn't just perfect, given the fact that we are trillions of dollars in debt now, and the national parks have been, you know, they've been damaged by these people, and the environment's been damaged by these people, and the grotesque crimes, ecologically, economically, everything that these people have done, that will be, that our children and grandchildren are going to be saddled with for generations now. The damage is far-reaching. So I worry that this is all not fixed in 4 years, and that first of all, the red side will say, see, they didn't get it done. They're a bunch, and they spent their money on themselves, and they're corrupt, and they're a bunch of fags and niggers and spicks and kikes, and they're degenerates, and this is Hollywood, and they're going to say that. And on the left side, on the blue side, what we're going to have is exhausted liberals/progressives who don't have enough psychic energy to be as warlike as, well, as Franklin Roosevelt encouraged us to be happy warriors in the face of the Depression.
Wasn't he a wonderful man?
World
he
War
was
II,
a wonderful man.
The whole inspiration of saying, you've got to go out there and be a happy warrior. And what a happy warrior is someone like Aunt Eller in Oklahoma. It's a flinty person who is beat up, is a little bit bony, can't walk so fast. Her hands are killing her because her arthritis is murdering her. But she still picks up the shovel, she picks up the pick, she picks up the hoe, and she goes forward and she says, well, I've only got 12 calories left, but what I've got left, I'm burning, like Bernie Sanders, for instance, like Elizabeth Warren. She's a happy warrior. There's a certain Kamala Harris is a happy warrior. She's a young woman.
Mm-hmm.
She's pretty and young. So you can't look at her and say, well, she's challenged, you know. She's juicy. This is ridiculous. She's so attractive. You know, she's got plenty of moisture left. But it's someone like Elizabeth Warren who's older and is like, nope. Her hand gestures and the way she talks, she's flinty. That's a perfect word for that. And that's what the blue side is going to have to be, because I'll tell you something. If we're not as flinty as Aunt Eller, as Katharine Hepburn, as let's think of people like that, who are Spencer Tracy, is like people that are flinty and tough and that New England resolve, that, you know, that thing. If mm-hmm. we aren't like that, we are going to run up against those red, three-toothed, hillbilly, shiny, gun-collecting, squirrel-eaten, that crowd. We're going to run up against them, and they are willing to go to public squares with their guns and their pitchforks. They are willing to light torches. They are willing to be the radicals of the right, and we are going to have to be flinty. We're going to have to be tough. We are going to have to be one of my heroes, Madame Defarge. And yes, the French Revolution turned out kind of badly in some ways, but revolutions do sometimes. They start out right, and then they begin to dine on their own. You have to figure out when a revolution has to stop eating its children. But the French Revolution, the Russian Revolution, the American Revolution, they didn't come out of nowhere. They came out of people being flinty and breaking the rules and saying, this is enough. I am sick of you, Nicholas Romanoff. I am sick of you, Marie Antoinette. I am sick of you, Donald Trump. I am sick of you, George III. I'm sick of you. And it was considered impolite to be a revolutionary in 1776. Go watch the musical.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, please, sit down. John Adams, sit down, John. Oh, everybody's taxes are too high, but we're part of the most wonderful empire that has ever lived. Why are you being so disagreeable and disrespectful? George III is a wonderful king. Why are you being so impolite? You're impolite. Well, if we were all so busy being polite, we would be Queen Elizabeth's subjects right now. And we'd all have an accent, and we would all – I mean, wow. It's ridiculous.
There's something to be said for that at the moment.
Yes, unfortunately. Yes. Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about something nice now. Let's talk about something nice. Pamela, how are you doing? Now, you mentioned that you were feeling a little under the weather and you weren't able to do our Food Fridays. How are you doing? What was the problem? Or can't you stay on the air?
I'm well. I'm fine. It was nothing health. You know just how life takes over you. You know, I juggle two jobs. I have an 8-year-old child, and you know, life just takes over sometimes. So,
well, if you're referring to like sixes and sevens and being out of sorts, this week was certainly one for Mummy. Mummy was extremely out of sorts. Our household was out of sorts. We have cardboard boxes still to the ceiling. We're unpacking as quickly as we can, but we're trying to do all sorts of things at once. And Gwendolyn just explained it being Jupiter in retrograde and Mars going forward or vice versa. And she said it's about another week that it's going to be like this and then it'll settle down. So I'm trying not to take things too seriously, but being a wasp, I take everything seriously. So,
you know, yeah. It's been an interesting road. I have a foster child. He's 8 years old. Okay.
Right.
He comes from a very abusive background. Okay.
Oh.
And you know, in all aspects, physical, mental, sexual, you name
terrible.
It, it's all been done. Just terrible. And you know, one of the things when he got to the my home about 6 months ago, and he came in and he, you know, was talking. He was very nice, very, you know, he'll talk to, you know, anybody that'll listen. right? Mm-hmm. And the one thing that he said was, when he found out that I was gay, you know, shocker, he's like, well, those people should die.
Wow.
At 8 years old, this is what he was taught. Since then, we have had an amazing breakthrough, and actually last week, we took him to Hamburger Mary's, of all places, to watch The Wizard of Oz. They were doing a thing of The Wizard of Oz on an evening, and we watched it. And he came back, and he says, you know what? People are just people, and that was fun. And can we come back tomorrow?
That's nice.
At 8 years old. You know, and it was amazing to see that transformation from being taught that, you know, gay people should die and they're horrible, and out of an 8 year old African American child who is also a you know, a minority, you know, just like, you know, gay people are.
Exactly.
But wasn't taught that, but taught that the gay people were a minority, that he wasn't. And it's just been an amazing revelation, an amazing ride with him through all of this, to open his eyes up to many things. It was so funny.
And how long has he been with you?
6 months.
Pamela, how long has he been with you?
6 months.
Wow. Yeah.
6 months. And it was amazing because he saw the orange bag of jiggly jello, as you call him, on the television. He's like, he came up on the television. He's like, does this man ever shut up?
Wow. Yeah.
At 8 years old.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't think he, and he said, he hasn't done anything good for us.
Yeah.
8 years old. 8 years old. Amazing.
Wow.
Out of the mouths of babes.
Yes, absolutely.
You know?
Meanwhile, Ben Carson was on TV today. And it was like watching Ben Carson was watching, like watching a drugged baby mumbling in a suit, a drugged baby in a rumpled suit mumbling about housing and education. It was just like, I looked at him and I thought, what is going on? Is he on morphine? Has he taken 20 Valiums? What is going on? It's incredible to me. So maybe there is hope in this new generation, you know, the young generation. Kamala Harris, Kamala, is it Pamela? It rhymes with Pamela, doesn't it? So it's Kamala. It's Kamala Harris, right?
Kamala.
Like Pamela.
Yeah, Kamala.
Kamala. Anyway, she's my hope. She's the hope for me.
Is
to have a woman, and an African-American woman, and a Hindu woman, a woman of mixed race, mixed nationality, and a woman. I just think that, and then she's that educated. Oh, and then she's got personality, too. Oh, please.
Yeah, right?
Give her a gun, give her a bazooka, give her a flamethrower, and put her in a fabulous dress. And push her out the door, and you go downtown, and you mill around doing what you need to do, Kamala. Just whatever you decide, you go do it. Because it's like, oh, my God, please. And you know what? Take Elizabeth Warren with you as the sidekick, you know, the two of you. That would have been a ticket for me. I think that would have been a fabulous ticket, the two of them together.
It would have.
You know, why are we still putting our toes delicately in the chilly water of the election with, well, now we still should have an older white man. So Joe Biden is old and white and a man, and he's straight. So let's just dip our toe gently and have him have a vice president who says, no. The blue side, again, an old grandpa cardigan sweater fraying at the elbows, and at the one of its buttons is missing another. Oh, look, the third button is hanging 3 inches of thread, swinging back and forth. That whole blue cardigan sweater, out it goes. We should have had Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris. And you know what? They should have picked their entire cabinet should have been taken from the Democrat debating committee, that team. Those 12 people on stage, Andrew Yang, treasurer, you know, each one of them take it.
Right. Yeah.
And if you want to really make it interesting, you want to make it really frisky, use all of them as the cabinet, and then get Governor Kasich from Ohio as a Republican and bring him into your cabinet, draft him into some position and really scare the crap out of the right wing. That's what Lincoln did. Lincoln hired all of his enemies for his cabinet. All those people that hated Lincoln. He looks like a monkey. He's a gorilla. He's a Westerner. He's a hillbilly from Illinois or Kentucky or something. He was born in a log cabin. All that resentment of Lincoln, he took all those aristocrat high blue bloods and said, guess what? You're my new treasurer. Did you know that Mummy's ancestor, Hannibal Hamlin, was his first vice president? So I have a direct link. Direct. My grandfather was Hamlin. My grandfather was John Ray Hamlin. And so John Raymond Hamlin, and direct line right back to Hannibal Hamlin. I still haven't figured out why he wasn't Lincoln's vice president the second time around, but I think it was because Lincoln had to build a coalition with the South more. And that's why he had Andrew Johnson from Tennessee. A former Democrat and a former slave owner and all of it. He had to build a coalition. But Lincoln was the ultimate at building a coalition with all sorts of people who were his enemies. And he decided, what's that old expression? Keep your friends close and your enemies closer. And that's what he did.
Yes.
He surrounded himself with his enemies so that then he forced them into, as Gwendolyn so brilliantly said, Republican compromise. He checkmated them. How could they thwart him if this one had been the Secretary of War and this one was the Secretary of the Treasury? It's like, oh, well, there you go. He cut your nuts off. Now you have to work. You have to work together.
Right.
Because you're sitting across from that monkey from Illinois, that 7 foot tall ape that you keep saying is an ape. Well, there you go. A genius, an IQ of 212 or something in an ape's body. And now you're going to have to compromise with him because you're going to talk with him. Brilliant. Brilliant. I wish that Biden would do that. I wish Biden would announce who his cabinet's going to be. And it would be all of those people. That would be just amazing.
Oh yeah. That would be amazing. Anyway. It would be. So have you cooked anything this week?
I have been cooking. I still haven't found all. I'm finding immense breakage. I've found a couple of things that have really broken my heart, even more than the mahogany table from a month ago. I found I'm unwrapping things and unpacking things, and it's like it's been very discouraging. I haven't found all my all-clad yet, but I have unpacked enough, and I have been cooking things, nothing from scratch yet because we're not at that point yet. So we're doing but we're going to Wegmans and buying, chicken and, roaster chickens that are done. And then I
bake
some
more.
Because
they used to, years ago when I lived up north and had at Wegmans, they used to have the dinners that you could go in and
they have the
entree. You just went home and reheated them.
Pamela, that's such a good question. But which prepared dinners? Pamela, every time you think you find something in Wegmans, like the boys and girls at home, it's like, so I was looking for rice, and I was looking for wild rice, okay? So I wanted to get some prepared some wild rice. So I'm going down, and I asked an employee, and the employee said, well, it depends. Do you want wild rice, or do you want all the ethnic rices? So Wegmans is literally the New York Public Library. You go in, you can find fiction or nonfiction. You can find blue books or red books. You can find books that are on geography or food. You can find a fictional book that's blue on food from Ireland. But where do you look for those things? Because how do you categorize them? So I was looking in an aisle and I saw a sign overhead. Because Wegmans is like being on a turnpike. They have all those signs overhead, and you turn left, and you go three miles down, and you're in the rice section. Okay, but then you see in the distance Indian food, Mexican food, Cambodian food. You go there, and they each have their own rice section.
Oh, my God,
it's right. So you just said, and I love you for this, do they have their prepared meals? Yes. In which section? Because they have different brand names of prepared foods. They have different ethnic prepared foods. I've gotten these things. I've gotten chicken frances with a lemon sauce, a rice thing, and then asparagus. And then next to it, they have a meatloaf, which is delicious, not as good as mine, but pretty heavenly for pre-made food, mashed potatoes and green beans. And it's refrigerated. You could take it home and freeze it, or you can prepare it within a week or so. I've bought several of those simply because we don't have the time or the energy right now or the strategy to make things from scratch. So I'm not doing
right.
that because the island in my still has industrial things on it. It has a toolbox on it because that's a central place to have the big tool chest where we can grab a hammer or a screwdriver or something, whatever. So it's
right.
not a place where I can be rolling out meatballs or making your pierogies yet. But yes, I'm cooking like that, and my kitchen is a joy. My kitchen is absolutely a joy. I don't know what to there was so much I wanted to tell everyone tonight. I'm going to tell you one quickie thing, though. This is very disturbing. And again, you and Gwendolyn are probably used to this. You certainly are, Pamela. We don't know when our windows are wide open or not because it's so quiet here. It's suburbia. But the windows are wide open. So it's as quiet as if you had multi-thousand-dollar thermopane windows sealed and shut. The
right.
only way you know that the windows are open is if a breeze is stirring my orchids and my cycads. If you, and even
mm-hmm.
then, we've got ceiling fans going. But if you see the plants stir near a window, you can suddenly go, oh my God, the windows are open and it's dead silent in the middle of the day. In the
yeah.
middle of the day. It's
Isn't
so
it wonderful.
Oh, God. I feel like 50 years of living in New York City, I feel like someone who has escaped from prison. I didn't know I was going to have this detoxing going on. I sleep. The thing that disturbs my sleep is the quiet. If I am awake,
yeah.
if I do wake up at 5, it's because it's too quiet, and I'm learning how to be asleep in quiet. But I go to sleep instantly. When I hit the pillow, I fall asleep as if I'm dead. I literally fall dead asleep. It's the most
wow.
amazing experience to
it
be
is.
This quiet,
it
this
is.
Healthy, to be this healthy, to be, it's so healthy. I keep wondering when I'm going to wring my hands about leaving New York. And you folks know, you think of me as being New York. You said, I mean, the oh my God, the notices I'm getting on my Facebook pages. Mummy, say you haven't left New York. You are New York to me. All of my experience in New York is through your eyes and your Tourette's. New York will always, I haven't been to New York. I always dreamt that I would come to New York and have brunch with you and meet you in New York at the same time. Oh my God. I mean, I burst into tears reading these things. And what I feel, and I feel like a traitor, because what I want to say is, New York, Schmoo York, listen, I wouldn't go back there if you gave me the Mega Millions. I've actually joked with George, if I won the Mega Millions, I don't know that I would go back and buy a home there. I'm talking about the Mega
right.
Millions, $500 million.
Right.
I'm talking about a phenomenal amount of money.
Do
I don't know that
another.
I would go back. I'm sorry, what is it, Gwendolyn?
We do have one other caller.
Oh, have them join Pamela and me. That'd be great.
Okay.
We only have a few minutes, but.
Yeah, there you go. 513 area code, you're on my own.
Hello.
Hello,
Sybil and Gwendolyn
yes.
and Pamela. How are you this evening? This is Steve in Cincinnati.
Steve, how are you? We were just discussing the
bad.
Fact that detoxing from New York was remarkably painless. It was like, I keep wondering what I'm going to regret leaving New York. I feel so
yes,
strange.
I heard you maybe not last week. Last week when you were saying how you were surprised at how non-traumatic it was that New York.
Well, and I keep
New
waiting.
York.
So then I thought when I signed off last week, Gwendolyn and I always do a postmortem after the show. We always talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you know what, Gwendolyn, next week it'll have finally hit me that I'll never sit in my bay window again or that I'll never do this, I'll never do that. I keep waiting. I keep waiting, and it hasn't happened. And it's just
so,
I guess if I were to stroll through my Tourette's on my YouTube channel, but then I'd be wringing my hands over Omaha and Toledo and Cincinnati, too. I mean, you know, I'd be in
right.
museums and zoos I've been to. But – yes, I know in one half of my brain that my bay window in the snow or in a thunderstorm was breathtaking and heartrending. But I don't know. It's very strange.
there will be more new experiences and wonders of, as you discover what's around you there, I'm sure. So my two quick questions is, speaking of Tourette's, I assume we can expect, once you're all settled in, some lovely Tourette's of your new abode and palace, and I hope those will be forthcoming, but I imagine you're waiting until you're all settled in and decorated.
Well,
lots
not
of
completely, but
with the new place, I guess. So that's exciting.
Yeah, not completely. But, I don't need to be set up like a House and Gardens, you know, magazine.
Right.
But I do want to be a little bit more unpacked. But literally, you know, unpacking and cleaning and organizing and everything takes a little bit longer than most people realize. You know, if you don't live out of one suitcase, it takes a little bit longer. Anyway, and then what was the other thing, Stephen, you wanted
to do? The other one
do?
Was just, it popped into my head, which is why I called, now that you're, you know, a desperate housewife in the suburbs, no offense, humorous term, I hope, but you have a house and a bit of a yard and a first floor entry, is there any opening in your future to adopting a pet? A doggy or kitty that's lost their home.
I would give anything to do
that. Is
that
something on your mind? In New York, that's probably pretty tough just because they'd have to be inside almost all the time and no nature, no yard, or no grass.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's difficult, possible situation.
I happen to live with someone who is profoundly allergic to animals and like an asthmatic problem. And so George has never been able to be around dogs or cats, hypoallergenic species. He's never been an animal. He's never been comfortable with animals, both because of his allergies and also because he's a bit of he's a little phobic about them. I think he had like a very traumatic experience as a very young child about a dog. And it changed him completely. I would live like Snow White. I would have you saw my relationships with the birds at Strauss Park. I mean, birds would dive bomb me and come at me when I would be walking in there. All seasons of the year, they would suddenly start flying at me, and people would remark. People on benches would say, "Oh my God, what's happening?" I would say, no, they're coming up to me to be fed. They're flying at me. Yeah, and they're flying at me and displaying. They're doing the sparrows especially. They would fly right at my face and then spread their wings as they got too close and then, of course, fly off. They would fly around and then land. So they were sort of – I don't know what it would be called, but they were displaying. It was sort of like a display of joy and excitement.
Yeah, you should have tried throwing a piece of bread up in the air and see if they caught it.
Well, I did. I did that with seagulls. I love doing that with seagulls at the ocean.
Uh-huh.
Seagulls will play tricks with you. If you throw it up in the air, they'll catch it, and they get into showing off and everything. And the other ones that do it are the grackles, my wonderful grackles. The pigeons are too fat and stupid to do that. And the sparrows would do it a little bit. They would catch. They would play catch. But the grackles, oh, my God, they love
grackles are corvids. They're related to crows and jays, you know, highly intelligent.
And very cute. I'm so pretty. I love the markings on there. And they were more skittish. The pigeons and the sparrows would make them skittish. So I think that's why they enjoyed catching food in midair, because then they didn't have to battle with the neurotic little sparrows and the dopey, you know, lumbering pigeons. The grackles didn't want any part of either of them. They wanted to have their own food. And every time I'd throw food to them, the pigeons would lumber over.
For alcohol.
I just realized something. We're out of time. I'm looking at the time, and I didn't hear
it. Yes.
Listen, Pamela, Stephen, thank you for calling in. Is it a date next Monday? Let's just agree that we're going to put cocktail shakers together and just make martinis or cocktails. And then, Stephen, you call in earlier, and then we'll just have a cocktail party.
Well, that sounds fun. I'll pencil that in.
That's Monday Monday the 21st? What is that? I'm not near my calendar. It's something.
Yes.
All right. I love you both. Love you both.
Likewise.
Thank you, listeners. We were brought to you by DaughtersOfIsis.com tonight. This was Come Now, Don't Sulk with my producer, Gwendolyn Holden-Berry, who's the producer and the muse behind this show and behind DaughtersOfIsis.com. The fragrant memories of our ancestors. Do check out their website. And if you'd like to be a sponsor, please contact Gwendolyn or me here or on Facebook at SybilSays.com, SybilBrunchen.com, or on our pages, including
Sybil Brunson's Lollipop Guild, a place for happiness, fun, and funny posts only. All right, listen, good night, everybody. Good night, and Gwendolyn, I love you.
I love you, too. Good night, Mommy.
We'll see you next week. Bye.